There's only one benefit I found out to having a little sinus trouble, and that you can hit lower notes when you sing. That being said, apologize for my condition this evening. I seem to wake up okay, and then as the day goes on, my ears feel like they get full, and then I just start getting stopped up. So this is a little shorter tonight. I apologize. But as always, it can be very short and have a very powerful message in it. So that's my prayer tonight. No fancy introduction, and we're going to get into a lesson text tonight. We're actually in Genesis. This is not something I usually do. I'm usually not in the Old Testament too much. That's a matter of personal preference when I preach, but tonight we're in Genesis chapter 24, and it is a rather lengthy reading this evening, and that's why I don't have it on the screen. But Genesis, very first book of the Bible, so very early on, and God's revealing His will to us. Genesis chapter 24, and we're going to read verses 1 through 20. Actually, 21. 1 through 21. I'm reading out of the New King James this evening. The Bible says, "Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things." So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house who ruled over all that land he had, "Please put your hand under my thigh, and I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell. But you shall go to my country and to my family, and take a wife for my son Isaac." And the servant said to him, "Perhaps the woman will not be willing to follow me to this land. Must I take your son back to the land which you came?" But Abraham said to him, "Beware that you do not take my son back there. The Lord God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my family, who spoke to me and swore to me, saying, 'To your descendants I give this land,' He will send His angel before you, and you shall take a wife for my son from there. And if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be released from this oath. Only do not take my son back there." So the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and swore to him concerning this matter. Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels and departed, for all his master's goods were in his hand. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. And he made his camels kneel down outside the city by a well of water at evening time, and the time when women go out to draw water. Then he said, quote, "O Lord God of my master Abraham, please give me success this day and show kindness to my master Abraham. Behold, here I stand by the well of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. Now let it be that the young woman to whom I say, 'Please let down your pitcher that I may drink,' and she says, 'Drink, and I will also give your camels a drink,' let her be the one you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And by this I will know that you have shown kindness to my master." And it happened before he had finished speaking that, behold, Rebekah, who was born to Bethuel, son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother, came out with her pitcher on her shoulder. Now the young woman was very beautiful to behold, a virgin, and no man had known her. And she went down to the well, filled her pitcher, and came up. And the servant ran to meet her, and said, "Please let me drink a little water from your pitcher." So she said, "Drink, my lord." Then she quickly let her pitcher down to her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, "I will draw water for your camels also, until they have finished drinking." Then she quickly emptied her pitcher into the trough, ran back to the well to draw water, and drew for all his camels. And the man, wondering at her, remained silent so as to know whether the Lord had made his journey prosperous or not. Did he ever wonder why he still had to wonder? I don't think he had to wonder too much. In this day and age, it's sad because, and you see, and like I say, I always say Facebook a lot because I spend time on there for a lot of reasons. One, I do like to keep up with my friends and my family. Two, there are some very good things out there to kind of help encourage you throughout your day, and I do mean religious things. And there are good, clean, funny things on there. But one of the things you do find a lot on there is the idea of people complaining about how it seems like in this day and age, everybody gets a participation trophy. You know, in school we have completion ceremonies. I don't recall having kindergarten completion ceremony. Not me. I remember 8th grade, and of course I remember high school. High school's a rite of passage, you know. But now they want to do kindergarten completion. They want to give certificates out for everything. And if we don't give a little Timmy a certificate, we know he kind of feels left out, and we hurt his feelings, you know. Sadly, at times, I think that that permeates its way into our relationship with God if we're not careful. Because we've let this worldview come in that everybody gets a participation trophy without having to, they don't have to do anything to give any effort. And my fear is that we let that creep into our relationship with God where we do just enough to be able to receive the maximum benefit of being in a relationship with God. And that kind of goes back to this morning what we talked about too. It's not just enough to be here on Sunday mornings and Sunday nights and Wednesdays. We have got to open our Bibles and we've got to essentially feed ourselves. You know, we go home and we cook meals. At least I do. I cook meals. I prepare meals. That's kind of hard right now. Our cooktop's broke. But anyway, so we cook meals for ourselves. I mean, it's the same way with the Bible. You have to use the same analogy. I mean, you've got to get in there and you've got to dig and you've got to feed yourself spiritually. And being here Sundays and Wednesdays is not enough. It takes a commitment on our part to read and study the Bible. And that's something we have to do daily. But then when you look at Matthew chapter 5, and Jesus talks about going the second mile, okay, it implies that there's a certain level, another level of commitment that we have to get to in our relationship with God. Because he tells those people that he's talking to, he says, you know, if you only love those that love you, guess what? You're no better than the tax collectors. And that was just a huge slap in the face to those Jews at that time that were listening because they thought that they were doing what they should have been doing. And Jesus talks up to him and says, you have heard it said. And they're like, yeah, preach it, brother. But now he's saying, no, that's not the case. And now you're no better than the very people that you esteem yourselves to not be like. So it was kind of a rude awakening for them. It should be a rude awakening to us too. Jesus is telling them they have to go above and beyond what they have always believed the scriptures to say, the Old Testament scriptures to say. It's the same thing with us. We've got to go above and beyond what we think the scriptures mean and what they say. So here in Genesis 24, you have a young woman who goes way above and beyond what was asked or expected of her. She goes way beyond. Because see, in verse 19, if you look at that with me again, he asked for a drink. See? Or excuse me, in 17, he says, you know, let me have a drink. And she says, yeah, I'll give you a drink, you know. And guess what? That's what's required. Because she asked. I mean, excuse me, because he asked that of her. That was what was required. That's what he asked. But she takes it a step further. She says, I'm going to give your camels a drink too. Okay? She didn't say that, but that's what you see. She wants to give those camels a drink too. And what we don't think about is, you know, it's not like us today where we can just walk over to a water faucet. It's got a little garden hose attached to it. We just fill a bucket up and we just bring it over to what, you know, whatever we need to drink, you know. I don't know. Does anybody here have horses? Nobody here has horses? Okay, you do. So, I mean, you know, you just take it and fill the trough up and there you go. With her, she had to carry this pitcher. And this pitcher was no small pitcher. It was at least 3 to 5 gallons. That was customary, and she's coming out of the city and she's carrying it down to this well. 3 to 5 gallon pitcher. Now, have you ever tried to carry a 5 gallon bucket of water? I know I have. I've carried a 5 gallon bucket of hot patch and water and everything else. It's heavy, you know? And these camels, where they have them at for sanitation purposes, it says they're by the well, but they're not like right there at the well because don't think the sanitation wasn't important to them back then either. You have all these people that are trying to draw water out of this well, so they've got the camels some distance away. The Bible encyclopedias, the research I do, says they could have been as far as 100 yards away. So that's quite the trek she's got to make, and not to mention to lower it down in there and to pull it up and then to put it on her shoulder and then to go and to dump it. Oh, we're not done yet. Now, how many gallons of water camels drink? They could drink 20 to 30 gallons of water at a time. And how many camels were there? Did you check that? 10. That's a lot of trips back and forth to give those camels some water. And so she has quietly, very quietly committed herself to somebody that she doesn't even know, to committing to giving him a drink, not only him, but also to all of the camels as well. Now, I can totally tell you, look you in the eye and tell you, I probably would have a hard time doing that. That was a lot of work. Somebody says, hey, I need a drink. Yeah, here you go. Here's my pitcher. Go down there and get it yourself, you know. But that's not what she said. That's not what she did. So like I said, I can honestly say I don't know if I would have done that. And another thing that we don't think about either is, what was her reason for going down to the well anyway? To get water for who? Her family. Okay? All the women come down to draw. Now, don't ask me why. Custom, whatever. The women were the ones that went down and they got the water. So while she is serving this man and the camels, her own family is kind of probably wondering, where is she? Because they need the water to wash their hands, to clean up, and to wash clothes. Just all the things that we do, you know, with water to think about for bathing, for cleanliness. And so she's being of service to someone she doesn't even know, at the expense and of sacrificing the fact that her family needs water at this time. Now, at best, I might have walked up and said hello to this guy, you know, if it was me. At best, maybe I would have. I don't know. But as we talked about in the beginning, our culture has trained us to do just enough. And there's a book, I've cited it before, it's by Kyle Eidelman, it's called Not a Fan. And in that book, he says that there are Christians out there that call themselves Christians that want to be just close enough to God to get the maximum benefit that God has to allow, while not getting too close, that actually requires us to sacrifice serious time, effort, and even money. And I'm not trying to imply that God is up there, you know, keeping score, you know, like, well, you know, I'm just, myself as again, well, Kurt, you didn't do enough today, you know, or Kurt, you only scored a 70 on this test that I gave you today. You need to do a little better next time, buddy, you know. That's not at all what I'm saying, okay? What I'm saying is if we belong to God, or either we belong to God or we don't. If we do belong to God, He has called us to be totally different. He has called us to go that extra mile and to be totally committed and dedicated to Him. So where's that call in our life? Is that call in our life our number one priority? Is that what dictates everything that we say and that we do? Because can you imagine if someone was watching what was going on with Rebecca from afar, when she watched her give him a drink, and then she's running back and forth. And by the way, did you catch that? She quickly dumps it in there, and she runs back to the well. Now, what does that show you? It's not that she's doing this, oh, well, I guess I better go do this. No, she is eager to go do it. She is eager to serve this individual. Are we eager to serve those that we come across that need our help? Or that asks something of us? Or do we view it as a mild inconvenience at times? It's all about our perspective here. And that's what the Bible's trying to tell us here in just this one story. Be eager to serve those who ask something of you. Because for the person looking on at Rebecca, they may think, boy, there must be really something that this guy has promised her something. You know, that's why she's doing this. Or he must be paying her a lot to do this, but what the onlooker doesn't understand is that, no, she's just doing it because guess what? It's part of her character. It's part of what motivates her. Now, the motivating factor, obviously, it goes without saying, in our lives should be Jesus and keeping our focus on Him. Because if we're truly focused on Him, then that should be within our character. That should become a part of us. So are we showing the world that we're not like most other people in the world? Are we showing them what Christ would look like by our actions and the things that we do and our eagerness to serve? When we do have an opportunity to serve someone, are we going way above and beyond what is expected, or are we doing just what's required of us? Because Rebecca was working for no reward whatsoever. It was just part of her character, like we said just a second ago. And there's so many that want to do great things for God. I don't doubt that everybody in here says, God, use me. I want to do something big and I want to do something important for you. You know? At least that's my desire. It should be everybody's desire to be used by Jesus. But this is the point of the lesson I really want you to take to heart, because before we can have that opportunity to do big things for God, we have to be faithful in the little things. And what am I talking about? Well, the serving that we do every day by taking care of our families, whether you're a husband or a wife or grandparent or whatever, the little things, taking care of our families, going to our jobs, bringing God glory there, because we can bring God lots of glory at our job. Okay? Because that's the thing too, the work culture that we're under sometimes, it's easy, really easy to get sucked into being just like other people are and doing just enough to get by to collect that paycheck instead of going the extra mile, you know, putting a little more effort, putting a little, taking a little more pride in your work. I know it was a conversation Bob was having one night, we were having on Wednesday night, you know. That's the little things that God puts you in charge of. He puts you in charge of your children. He puts you in charge of your grandchildren. So if you can be faithful in those little things, then the bigger things will come. And that's what Matthew chapter 25 teaches. Matthew chapter 25, if you don't know, that's the parable of the sheep and the goats. To paraphrase, the parable goes, "Come ye who are blessed of my Father, and inherit the reward prepared for you before the foundation of the earth. For I was hungry, and you fed me, and I was naked, and you clothed me, sick, and you visited me, in prison, and you ministered to me." You know the story. Okay? And those people fulfilled those needs, those little needs, just somebody that was hungry, somebody that was needed clothing, somebody that needed a visit. Those were little things. And guess what Jesus says? Hey, guess what? You were doing it to me, the big guy. So it might seem little, those little things, but it all adds up in the end. And that's why God asks us to be faithful in those little things. And that's the thing that I take away from that parable. Now, there may be something else you take away from that. You know, Rebecca, to close with, Rebecca, from the time that she was able to probably walk or be able to handle the task of going to get water, she didn't start out with a 3 to 5 gallon pitcher, I assure you. She started out with a little pitcher going down there with the other women, learning what her task was going to be in the future. So then whenever the little thing, she was faithful in the little thing when it started out, so that when she got to be an adult and we get to where we are here in Genesis chapter 24, guess what? She got to be put in charge of a big thing. And she passed the test with flying colors. So that's the end of our lesson this evening. Remember, be faithful in the little things. That's what I want you to take away from this tonight. Whatever little thing that God has put you in charge of, He's put you in charge of for a reason. Because little things can lead to big things. And sometimes the thing is that what might seem like a little thing to us, and that was why I brought up Matthew chapter 25, what might be a little thing to us is actually a really big thing to God. Only Him and His infinite wisdom and power. That's not going to zip up. But the bottom line is God knows what's best for each of us. He has put certain things in our lives that we are to take care of and never take for granted the things He's put in our lives, because they're put there for a purpose, both the good and the bad. Right? So if there's anyone here who has a need this evening, if you need the prayers of the church for struggles or heartaches that you're going through, if you want to learn more about becoming a Christian, we encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing our invitation song, number 687.